you guys.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Well, I am not sure how much ease in my mind I'm in right now. Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ up in command and control. And, you know, I'm going to take you back a number of years. And one afternoon, we hear there's a hurricane going to Tampa. And that was 2004, August, right?
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th, 2004, August. We board up the store. We're getting ready for some stuff. And the hurricane's going up to Tampa. We're not taking it that seriously. And all of a sudden, the sucker turns. And it comes in and hits Charlotte Harbor, where Fish and Frank's is, head on. Then it goes up and hits Harbor Heights, where I live, head on.
Hits Fish and Frank's again.
Yeah. So it took the house, the store, all our belongings, and decimated everything. And we looked all around trying to find a place to go, and there was nowhere to go. And the landlord really didn't have any insurance on the building because a woman had just outbid me. I got up to $350. She went to $380, or $480, rather. I was at $450. That was all the money I could, you know, come up with to borrow. And so she got it for $480, and then she didn't have enough insurance on it to cover everything. So Robert and I went looking everywhere, trying to find another place to put the store, and there was no other place. So many buildings were destroyed back then. I would say a third of Port Charlotte, commercial-wise, buildings were gone. You know, literally flattened and wrecked. But ours wasn't flattened. It was just wrecked. The ceiling had collapsed down. It was about 3 feet off the ground. And so we ended up saying, well, if we want to go back to work, we're going to have to fix this. So we got in there with 20-ton jacks. We jacked the ceiling back up. We braced it, and Chuck Hepp came in and had his guys there. And
yeah, but we stripped the walls down to bare concrete, you and I.
We literally went through
it. Pressure washed that whole inside of that store.
We were sitting with the pressure washer outside because of the gas fumes with this long hose on it, a 4,000 PSI pressure washer. We got about 4 inches of water in the store. Then we found out the floor underneath was probably pretty hollow because all the water went to one side of the store then disappeared down underneath the slab.
Yeah.
And we worked from starting in August. And the first thing I did back then was, you know, I made sure everybody was all right, family, friends, and everything. And I said, we got to get a plan together. So we left town, got a hotel, went off, bought an RV, and came back. We ended up living in that RV for over 3 years until we could get a house built again because we didn't want to borrow money to build a house. So, but we got the store back. We reopened late December, you know, 2004. And little by little, and we were down to one unit. We couldn't afford the rest of it, and they were trashed anyway. But and then little by little, we made some money and reinvested the money back in the store and kept putting it in, taking out just enough to keep alive. And we got another unit, and a little while later, another one. And then eventually it ended up where we were this year with a massive store and rooms and seminar areas and put everything we had into it. And then some guy came careening down US 41, drunk, and went into the ditch at the Shell station, flew 213 feet, and crashed onto the roof of the building on the far side of the building in the opposite back corner. If he would have just flew a little bit to the right a little bit, he would have ended up in the back parking lot. He would have completely cleared the building.
Yeah, 6 or 10 feet to the right.
If he would have been 8 inches to the left when he took off, he would have hit a pole, you know, before he took off. If he would have been going 50, 60 miles an hour, he would have jumped the thing there and ended up the side of the building, and we would have had a broken wall. But as it stands, at about a minute after 2 in the morning, I got a phone call. And the alarm company's calling. Now, I've gotten so many false alarms. We have a local alarm company, and every time a lizard crawled across the sensor or a spider, the alarms would go off. So the normal conversation was, hi, this is the alarm company. What's your password? I'd say, all right, give them my password. What zone was it? Did it reset? You know, because not long after we rebuilt from Charlie, we had finally got the other room. A guy, the alarm company called me on Wednesday and said, man, we're slammed. Can I come in on Friday? I said, what's one more day? The alarms were out. It wasn't working. And so we thought, oh, heck, what's one more day? And a guy came in and stole $64,000 worth of tackle, $65,000 that night. And we didn't have any insurance. We literally, just from the rebuild, we were putting all our money back into it. And we were just hoping for the best. So we had no insurance, lost $64,000 worth of product that night. The cops found him, arrested him. We got a bunch of our stuff back. And what was nice with the police is they used fingerprint dust on it, but they didn't run it through that machine to get the fingerprints, yeah, which puts like super glue on everything.
Right.
So, but we had to clean up all that fingerprint dust. We had a big sale, you know, you want to buy, you know, stolen tackle. And so we started off there and we did tent sales, and we had 3,500 people coming to tent sales. We had, but getting back to that night, after the usual conversation, this night, it's 2 minutes after 2, your store's being robbed. The back door sensor's going off. All the sensors are going off. They're running around the store stealing stuff. What do I do? What do I do? And this was the alarm person telling me this. What do I do? What do I do? I said, calm down. Call the police. Get the police on the way. I'll be there in a few minutes. So I literally grabbed my, put on shoes, pants, and a shirt. No socks, no nothing else. Grabbed my gun and drove down to the building reasonably calm, because I didn't want to kill anybody because something bad was happening, and I knew I had insurance, so I was heading to the store. And I get there, and I've got the gun in my hand. I'm pulling around, and I look, and fire trucks are pulling up. I can see the flames on top of the building. And I literally thought to myself, what the heck am I going to do with this? Shoot the flames? Right. You know, it's one time when a gun did you no good. So the cops said, you got to go over here, you know, and I jumped the curb and got over there by them and went up, and I'm looking, and it was a cluster. And I didn't even know what had happened at that point, because I was assuming somebody was robbing the store. I didn't find out till an hour or so later that the truck had landed on the roof. So I called Terry and told her about it. The store's on fire. And she came, we called Robert, we were calling everybody, because the weird part about all this is you're sitting there and, and to the point, you know, I had a cash deposit in there because we usually only keep a little bit of money in the store. But because of the coronavirus, we couldn't get to the bank right away. And so I literally had a stack of cash in there. Yeah, it was quite a bit of money. And, you know, I'm freaking out because I got the caches in there, the stores in there, and, you know, the thing is just, you get within 20, 30 feet of the building, and the front wasn't even on fire yet, and you could feel the heat. It was intense. And so I'm wandering around losing my mind. And then some idiot reporter goes to embarrassing moment here. All of a sudden, I look over, and here's this idiot reporter recording me on a cell phone. I got angry. I don't mean a little bit. I almost beat him into the ground. I gave him 10 seconds to delete his recording and get the heck out of my sight, or I would have hurt him badly. And so it's a little embarrassing moment, but I would say a little bit of it because of the shock, you know.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, you got a guy who's literally intruding on you while you're watching your entire life burn, and he's just no blatant disregard of, excuse me, I'm sorry, nothing, just not even telling you. And I get that that's public, but it was horrible, rude, and inconsiderate.
So one reporter almost got his butt kicked that night. He actually deleted it in front of me. See, it's gone, it's gone. And he took off running because he wasn't going anywhere until he deleted that. Some newspapers really just don't care about anything except, you know. So anyway, that was embarrassing moment number one. There's more to come. We are going to get to a fishing report, but it's been on the national news. Now, mind you, Robert's there, Terry's there, all the crew is showing up, and everybody's just standing there, dumbstruck. I mean, picture standing in your driveway and getting hit by an asteroid. That's what this was like. I mean, because whoever considers that you're going to have to put a catch net up above the building to catch falling pickup trucks.
Right.
I mean, seriously, who would even consider this as an option?
We were talking the other day about what it would have looked like if you were sitting in the CVS parking lot. Right. You wouldn't have been able to see anything, but you would have heard this engine whining as he was driving at a great rate of speed. And all of a sudden, there would have been this airborne pickup truck out of nowhere, up in the air, making the turn, coming face, you know, grill first down into the roof, and then, of course, the explosion and the gas.
There was a couple of the local homeless guys there.
Yeah.
And they're nice guys. I mean, they're homeless. They don't want to work. They just a meal a day and get drunk, and they're happy. But they're nice guys. They don't do any harm. They're not thieves or anything. But they watched it. They said when he took off, he went down in the ditch, and where the driveway out in front where the Shell station is, there's a little culvert. It's about a 3.5-foot rise from the very lowest part of the ditch up to where the driveway is. And he went there, and he was careening sideways, and then the truck leveled out going flat. And from what we understand, it nosedived, hit the roof of my office, and that's when the fuel tank ruptured. The truck then bounced off, doing another 360, so the nose hit, and the back end continued. It went up in the air again and came down nose first into the far back corner of the store where our rods and reels were. And so the fuel tank, I guess, ruptured when he hit the building the first time. I guess that's when he was ejected from the vehicle onto the roof, because they pulled him off the roof of there, and the vehicle continued on to nosedive down into the corner of the building. This is what we heard happened. Now, we're standing around there. For all of you who don't know us, yes, we do drink, but we don't drink and drive, and we don't do it irresponsibly. And thanks to RJ, we have Sextant Irish Whiskey, a favorite of the show for when things get really weird. I got to tell you, this is fairly weird.
Fairly? I think that's way understated.
And boys and girls, we're drinking right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whew. It's nice stuff.
It is.
Okay. Now, this is the part nobody knows except you and our listening audience. This is not the first time this has happened to me and Terry. Back when we first got together 34, 35 years ago, she had a 73 Mustang, turquoise and black, you know, the long nose, you know, mock something or whatever. She really loved that car. And it broke down and we had no money. We were literally living on rolled change trying to get our daughter money for school lunches. So we couldn't fix it. A buddy of mine, Jerry, owned SOS Marine. And he had a big chain link fence there, 8-foot fence around it, right? So in the front of his lot, he had the chain link fence, and then there was, I think it was a boat, and then I parked Terry's car there. We pushed it in that spot and said, as soon as we get some money, I'm going to come back and fix his vehicle up, right? Guy goes driving drunk down that road, goes through the ditch, up in the air, hits the telephone pole, catapults over the fence, over the boat, and lands on her Mustang. Seriously. So this is second time a drunk driver has launched their vehicle in the air and destroyed something we love.
Well, if three times the charm, do not park next to one of Frank's vehicles.
Oh, you can park next to it. It's going to land on mine.
Yeah, it'll land on
the safest place to be is right next door to us.
Right.
You know, did I tell you about that before, Robert?
Yeah.
So, anyway, so yeah, Hurricane Charlie, drunk driver driving, going through the air, hitting a pole, over an 8-foot fence, over a boat to land on her Mustang. This idiot drives down, misses by inches, poles, trees, everything, to launch through the air and land on top of our lives. And he's a drunk derelict. I mean, this
guy's... Several boats he actually cleared. He cleared two boats with T-tops.
Yeah, cleared the boats with T-tops. So, you know...
Definitely Mr. Toad's wild ride.
So, here we are, and so... It's getting daylight out and all this. And, you know, we're crying and angry and upset. And, you know, when you go through this, you're not just sad. You're extremely angry. You're extremely sad. You get moments of laughter. You get moments of tears. You know, you're going
moments
all
of scared.
All the way around everything. I mean, it's literally just you're whirlwinding through all this stuff. And it's finally getting light out. Now, the two local homeless guys, you know, they had said, the guy kept saying, I wasn't driving. So, based on that, okay, they got the fire out. They're still putting out hot spots and stuff. But they're trying to figure out, is there another body in the store? Right? So, they got to bring in the cadaver dogs. And it turns out one of them was a good friend of my sister's. Well, they go in there and they get these hits. Oh, my God, their dogs are going off. Well, now I got to go into the store with them, and then I have to explain that just after the first of the year, my father passed away, and in March, my mother passed away, and their ashes were on the shelf up there.
Oh, no.
Because we were going to take them out and do the burial at sea in the Gulf of Mexico. So there was three urns, one with my dad, one with my mom, and one with both of them. And then there was two boxes of ashes up there, which we were going to put into smaller containers and have a little ceremony out here in the harbor. So all of the kids and grandkids and great-grandkids and nephews and nieces and everybody could come, and everybody would have a little bit of ashes to do. Well, between the fire and the hoses and everything else, these ashes start, they're all over the place. There's two big boxes of ashes, three urns. And so I had to go in there and explain to the, you know, the police looking for bodies that I'm pretty sure that's my mom and dad there. So this keeps getting a little bit stranger as you go, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
So I haven't been talking a lot about this. I've been on Wink. I've been on ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. I've cussed out several reporters because they asked me, how do you feel? And I explained to them. And then they say, but you have 35 years of your life in here. How does that make you feel to see it gone? After the fourth time, I'm telling them to go. I had a couple words for them. And I told them, you know, what I thought of them and their family heritage. And because, I mean, are they stupid? What is wrong with reporters that they have to ask the exact same question over and over again, phrased a different way? give me a break. Ask me about my customers, one point. Ask me about my life. Ask me about my employees. Ask me about how I feel about this. But if you ask me how I feel about this 5-6 times, I'm liable to punch you in the mouth. You know, everybody, I'm not that great guy, folks. I'm okay. I try to be fair with people. I love my customers. I want everything to be nice. I want everybody to be friendly. But you push me to that point, back up, because I'm coming unglued. You know, that's, I'm sorry, that's who I am. You know, I would have to say I'm pretty friendly, I would guess. But we've been talking about this a lot and wondering, you know, what's going to go on. And taking you back to Sunday morning after the sun came up and the fire department's there and, you know, it, I would say the weirdest thing is men and women from in their teens to their 80s were coming up sobbing. I mean, literally sobbing. Yeah. And I'm having a hard time dealing with it. I'm walking back and forth, and I still think I'm going to go into that store and see what we can salvage. This is what's in my mind.
Right.
I want to get in there so I can see what I can salvage. And then I went in with the cadaver dogs, you know. I mean, there were still hot spots in there when we were walking around in there. And to come to the realization, there is nothing left to salvage. Not a thing. And they said, well, you know, they keep asking me, what are the contents worth? Let's see, 43¾-inch snook, skin mount, beautiful, done by Orville Triebelwasser. He's dead. Nobody does a skin mount anymore. I could buy replicas, but this is a skin mount snook. You can feel how sharp the gills are. You can feel the roughness of the mouth. Tens of thousands of people have touched that fish. Skin mount sawtooth shark, right as they were going to go endangered. I called FWC. I said, I want something to teach people with. And the black drum, the cobia skin mounts, all the stuff that is... Our three swamp apes, our butt monkeys, are gone. My fur-covered bass. It's a high mountain buck-tailed cat bass. Where are you ever going to get another one of those? They only live in the mountains of central Florida where the swamp mist covers the mountains so you can't see it, and they come down those rivers. There's only one of that, you know, and 4,000 or 5,000 pictures dating back to 1985. Some of them might be, you know.
I think 84 was the...
84, 85, but, yeah. I mean, from then all the way up through to when people quit taking pictures. Now we see it on cell phones. But Polaroids, and all those Polaroid pictures, when Hurricane Charlie hit and literally gutted that place out, we walked around for a half a block area, picking up pieces of drywall and taking the pictures off, wiping them down, drying them off, putting them in boxes. And once we got the expansion, we've been putting them up on the ceiling. There's literally, I think we only had like 600 left to put up. But they're gone, you know. But I'm going to say the hardest thing about it is that store was a bubble of my early life. That's what I wanted. I wanted when you walked into that store... You go back 50 years in time. Back to when if you forgot your wallet, that's okay. Just come back, pay us the next time. You know, and when you walked out the door, you were in 2020. But when you walked in that door, we were 50 years in the past. I'd say that's about right, wouldn't you, Robert?
Absolutely.
Robert's really, really emotional over this. I have been through every emotion... yesterday, I said, this is enough, because I ended up yelling at Terry. And she started crying. I said, what kind of jerk are you? I don't care what circumstances you're in, what pressures you're under. You know, I went off on her, and she started crying. I said, this is another embarrassing moment. This is the truth of what happens. And I said, this is it. No more stress. I'm done. I'm not going to. I told people we're doing fundraisers, and they're arguing with each other on the internet. I said, knock it off. Nobody does anything for 2 days. I don't want any fundraisers. I don't want anything going on for at least 2 days. Everybody take a step back. I'm getting crazy. The world's getting crazy. This is a time when I would really love hugs and, you know, tell me the memories of your store. But let's not argue with each other. This is not that time.
No.
And I'm sitting there arguing with Terry. I'm snapping at people. I said, that's enough of this.
Well, I got short with Christina the day before.
It happened to you, too.
I didn't snap at her, but I mean, in Robert's way, I got short and was a jerk. You know, so, I mean.
Which is like being me on a good day. Your meanness is like me on a nice day.
Right. But, no, it's just the plethora of emotions is just, it's overwhelming. And sometimes to take a breath, I mean, this morning was my first, literally, moment, because Christina had to go to work, where I was by myself to actually take a breath and start thinking about stuff. But that only lasted for about 15 minutes because I still had to answer half the texts that you've had to do and half the phone calls you've had to do. But it was surreal.
When you get by yourself for the first time, it spins. It really does, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. I don't even know how to describe it because it was numbing, to say the least.
Well, going back to Sunday, you know, at this point, all the computer stuff I did, the Facebook and all these other things and the website and everything, was all on a computer in my office. And maybe one of the reasons the office burned down so much, what, there are 30, 40 bottles of booze up on the shelf up there at least?
Yeah, I was upset about the moonshine being gone.
Moonshine from 13 different states. And I just drank, thank God I just drank the last of my honey. That came out of a couple old shiners from Pennsylvania. Now, yes, my life has been a bit chaotic, but this old couple, and they're actual shiners, right? They sell bootleg whiskey and stuff like that. And they knew where I kept my shine. And Sunday night we get home and, you know, we're drinking this. I had a couple bottles of Alice and stuff, and I'm just taking a couple sips to take the edge off. But Monday night I get home, there's a bottle of Pennsylvania moonshine sitting on my porch with a note saying, you know, make this last, I won't be back till October. So we had... There's been some bright moments.
Yeah.
And mind you, we have no idea what's going on the internet at this time. Sunday, we went through hugging people, and we literally forgot there's a coronavirus. We forgot that there was a world out there. We're standing in the back lot of the store, and all the employees and friends and captains and everybody, and people are walking up, and they walk up to you sobbing and crying and giving you hugs, and they're shaking your hands, and it was just crazy. And one of my friends who owns a local business up there came up to me and said, Frank, if you want to use this, I got a building up here if you want to use it. And I got Terry, and I said, okay, let's walk up and do it. Let's take a look. And it was amazing. But that was the moment I said, I can do this. If I want to reopen, if I want to do something, I can do this. So at about 5:30, quarter to 6, I tried to go home. Well, I made it to the driveway, and the phone calls came in. You got to come back. You got to do this. There's trailers and all this kind of stuff. And a guy's offering you a building, so, you know, you got to go look at the building and everything. So I come back to the store. I took care of what I had to do, and I went over and looked, and the building was no good for us. Now, this didn't just happen to us. This happened to Sean from Soundworks Customs. And I've been working next door to Sean for at least 10 years now.
Yeah.
Well, I looked at that and said, man, that building's perfect for Sean. So I get Sean on the phone, and I said, you interested in a building? And he's like, yeah. And I So I called the guy back who offered me the building for a couple months for free to get back on my feet. And I called him up, begged him to let Sean, and it didn't take anything. This guy's name is Tommy, and he owns like Tropic, something of Tropic?
Something plumbing.
Something, a plumbing, or Titan Plumbing.
Titan Plumbing.
Is that
Titan
it?
Titan Z. Plumbing.
And this, if you need plumbing, this guy.
Just stand up.
So amazing, amazing of a person. He called and offered it to me. And God bless his heart, this guy's wonderful. But I knew I couldn't do anything there. But Sean could. And he didn't hesitate an instant. He just said, him and Sean got together. Sean's in there doing business today because he didn't have hardly any insurance. He wasn't covered for this, you know, as I wasn't years ago when Charlie hit. I had a $25,000 insurance policy.
Sure.
Try and rebuild a store in 25 grand. From the carpets, the freezers, the bait tanks, the everything, and remodel the building on top of that to bring it back so that you can actually move in. And so Sean's in there. He's in business already. He's got a boat in there, and he's got his crews out working, and they're doing. He's going to be okay. But I was able to do that with Sean. I said, well, if I could do that with Sean, why can't I do it for me? So I called Dr. Joe Spadafora, Community Eye Center, and I said, hey, Joe, I know you got some properties. Anything I can look at? And then we found from him that wasn't really going to work, but we found his buddy who had another property that might work. And by Tuesday morning, I had turned in a loan application with my bank about getting this property, so at least we'd have it tied up. And because we don't know what's going to happen, if we'll get the building, not get the building, if we're going to open, not open. We have no idea what's going on right now. But I wanted some options. You know what I mean? Right. So Monday morning, I'd call, or Sunday night, after I looked at that building, I called the guys all together, and I say, hey, be at the store tomorrow. No laying up. We got stuff to clean up. We got stuff to, you know, we got to empty this warehouse. We got to start getting the trailer done. We got things to do here, guys. Let's go. So they showed up, and I said, hey, let's go look at maybe a place we might be able to do business. I know I freaked you out.
A little bit.
Come on.
I was too overwhelmed with all the other stuff. I just rolled with it. And then I've told you this over and over again. I'm going to go down on that ship with you no matter what. And you're going to tell me we're going to start over and go look at a building. Made me a glimmer of hope, but it was still a whirlwind where it was like, okay, so I'm going.
Anyway, I'm looking at this building, and it's possible. It's 50-50 at best right now. Whether we're going to be able to open or not open, we don't know. And we don't know about... In the meantime, I'm getting calls about all these fundraisers, GoFundMes, this, that. And, I mean, all these people want to do tournaments. And now they're fighting with each other who's going to do what. And these are the most wonderful, amazing people in the world. But things got a little out of hand. So I've asked everybody just to stop for a while. Now, here on record, I will tell you, and Robert will tell you, people have donated stuff to us, money and that. I have not taken a dime of it. I've given every cent to the people who work there. And if we reopen Fish and Frank's, all this GoFundMe money, all this other donation money, T-shirts, stickers, all these things, they are all going into rebuilding the store. I'm not taking any of that money. If for some reason we cannot go back into business, 100% of that money will go to the people who worked for me for all these years, worked with me, and everything else. I am not going to take a dime of that money. If I cannot be back in business, they gave their lives to that store, they will get 100% of that money plus money from me. That's the way it's going to work. So, one way or another, the money you're donating and everything else will either be to rebuild Fish and Frank's and put us back in business, or it will be severance pay to the people that work there based on years, hours they work, stuff like that. I'm figuring out a share program if I have to do that. I hope to go back in business. But it's a 50-50 world. I mean, Robert and I were talking about on the way up here that I think the hardest thing is going back to that 50 years in the past. if I go into a new building, how do you recreate the 70s? Because that's the era, you know, when it was the last little bit of time in the U.S. where you could walk in and not have your money and come back later and pay. Or, you know, I think the biggest problem, the biggest benefit to Fish and Frank's and the biggest problem I had was I didn't run it to make money. We ran it to have a nice life.
And so, to make other people's lives nice.
Well, you know, if somebody came in and they're looking around trying to find their kid a fishing pole and, you know, they got three kids and they can't afford it, we just bought everybody rods.
Right.
And here's a little secret, boys and girls, that I've kept for 35 years. Back when I first got started in the industry, I had a guy came in and his son had passed away. He was a big fisherman, and I'd only known him a few months, but him and his dad had been coming in the store. I hadn't been working there that long, and, you know, we're talking about different stuff and fishing, and it's about, I think it was 86, so it was 86 or 87, I don't remember, but his son got killed, and so every year on his son's birthday, he would bring in $100 or $200. And give it to me to help some other kid go fishing. So I would take that money and the money that, my money, and people would, you know, bring us in rods and reels they didn't want anymore, and we would set them in the corner, and when somebody came in who needed a fishing pole, who couldn't afford their stuff, I'd use his money, I'd use my money, but you know, when you got three kids fishing and you have one fishing pole, A, that's asking for a really bad day. You know, B, it's just not fun for the kids. So you get them the poles, you rig them up with the bobbers, you put all the stuff together, and you send them out fishing. And they go out, catch some fish, and, you know, it was just what you did. And you got people who, you know, the one woman came in with her son, and he liked the $140 combo. And then at braided line, we're literally talking $150 combo. But she only had $30. She was going to buy him this $30 combo. And even though she wasn't poor, you know, she works hard, you know, her and her husband and everything, they work hard, but you just don't always have the extra money for stuff. And the kid was happy just to get the $30 pole. I said, ah, that's probably not going to be a good deal. Let's get him the one he wants. So went over, got some line on it, and I said, I took his $29 pole while he wasn't looking. I grabbed the other one, went in the bag, put the line on the good one, walked out, said, okay, here you go. He's like, but that's, I said, what do you mean? That's your rod. That's the $30 rod. What are you talking about? Said, get out of here. What, you can't even remember what rod you wanted? You know? But if I would have ran it to make money, I wouldn't be in the situation of not having enough money to rebuild. But if I would have ran it to make money, we wouldn't have had so much fun.
Right.
Right, and you wouldn't have had a parking lot full of people last Sunday giving you hugs.
But therein lies the conundrum. For all these years, we've ran it to have fun, you know, to engage with our customers. You know, we would talk people out of big ticket items into smaller items. We would advise them, you know, back or forth, sometimes up, sometimes down, but never about, okay, how much money do I got to get out of this guy? The guys who worked there literally loved the customers because my policy was, I went into a place one time and it just sold. And I'm looking for somebody I know to find out what the heck's going on, why is everything different? And so I'm talking to a guy, and all of a sudden the new owner of the place come up, goes, I don't pay you to talk to him. I look at him and said, whoa. I said, well, you don't pay me to spend money here either. Bye. And I always said that when you came in the store, if you wanted to stand there and talk to one of the guys, that's his job. So if they were talking to a customer, teaching a knot, telling him fishing, talking about lures, anything, they didn't have to sweep the floor, dust the shelves, pick up the dead shrimp on the floor, clean the bait tanks, do all the stuff that is required to run a business as long as you were with a customer. So they would take, I mean, you know, you sure don't have any more questions? Can I help you anymore? You know, what are you doing, guy? Nothing left you want to talk about? Because they knew I'm standing in the back going, all right, get the broom, you know. It was different.
Definitely.
Well, I don't know if that changes, Frank. If you go to a new place, the philosophy survives the fire.
But the building I'm looking at, I would have to make money. The mortgage on it would be the insurance, the taxes, and then I got to run it through liability corporations. And I don't know, RJ. I really don't know. I don't know if
there's
I could
so
do it
many
again.
New things that has to be thought of. So, and it's so overwhelming just dealing with this moment, let alone all the new changes, that you got to still be able to take the moment to breathe and evaluate all of it, because it's going to be a whole new chapter, a whole new system, everything. So it's like you got to weigh it out to, can you still make it that family fun thing, but yet still survive? You know, he knows he's not going to die rich. I know I'm not going to die rich, but you still got to be able to survive. And this is a whole new, completely different change that is, honestly, at this bright moment, is completely overwhelming because of all the past and still trying to think about the future. So there's still a lot of other weird, unanswered stuff that keeps popping up as you're dealing with the present.
I think one point on the show here, we talked about the woman who came in for the plastic worms.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
And to this day, that's still one of the standouts, where a woman walks in and absolutely gorgeous African-American woman, just got a business suit on, and she's just as proper and amazing as, you know, you'd ever want to see a businesswoman be. And walks up to the counter and says, I need something 10 inches long, and it must be black. I bail out. Robert, God bless him, could stand at the counter, but I'm in the back room literally trying not to pee my pants. And finally make it back out. She wanted 10-inch culprit worms for her husband to go bass fishing. But sometimes how you phrase stuff can make a big deal.
Yes.
And
yeah. I turn around, him and the other employee, gone. Yeah. I mean, it was a glance out of the corner of my eye, because it just, the whole comment caught me obviously off guard too, but I have to keep a poker face as I'm watching out of my peripheral vision him disappearing.
I bailed.
How do I do this one?
Because she had no idea what she said. She was asking a very simple question that she thought was a logical thing to say, and countless times over the years we've run into these things. And how many times does somebody have a name for something? They call it in the Northeast or out West, and they have some name for something that you can't possibly...
What's the spoon that we have over there? The...
Oh, the dick?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Darn it.
Yeah, I know. It's not slippery, but it's that's a fish. Deadly dick.
Deadly dick.
Deadly dick spoon.
Okay. We got that new young little girl that just started, Carly.
Yeah.
Quiet. Very quiet. I'm in the back room with Steve unloading the freezers the other day, and I hear her talking to a customer. We're trying to pay attention because she's new, but she knows how to do the register. She comes walking up the counter or up the ramp into the room, and customer right behind her, and she goes, do we have this spoon?
Do we have a dick spoon?
Do we have this dick spoon? And the customer's going, well, I didn't. And I said, sure. The only woman in the place, the only young woman in the place, and you got to ask her for that.
You got to ask her for a dick spoon.
And yeah. I mean, he's already red following her up the stairs trying to correct himself. He's got the right name, and she's not familiar with any of the stuff yet, even though she fishes a lot, but had no idea that that was a real spoon. So she was a little embarrassed. He's totally embarrassed. And Steve and I are just standing there going, oh, this is good. We could really have fun with this.
Would have been 30 instead of 20,
right,
we could have had a ball with that.
Right.
Well, let me interject just for a minute, because we're going to make a slight program change here. Normally we are over by 2 o'clock. Normally, Fishy Radio is supposed to go on after us. We haven't had the time to program the new show in. So we're just going to go over till 2:30 today so we can get the fishing report in.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't mean to do this, but...
I think it was important that we did this. That
the
we
fire
had this
at Fish and Frank's, this little bait shop in on the pimple of a butt in the middle of nowhere, made the national news.
Well, and it affected a lot of people, and I think there's a lot of people listening today that needed to hear.
Gary Loomis called me from Washington State. He saw it on the news out there.
Mm.
Now, I've had calls from manufacturers and people from all over the country and a couple from out of the country, but we had no idea. We had no idea what was going on in the internet. We had no idea anybody even noticed this happen. We're trying to find a place to go, figure out our lives, get everything going. We're not thinking about the internet. That's not what we do. We don't. We never considered there would be a GoFundMe or a response to any of this. It was never part of the consideration. All we knew was we're in trouble. Let's get to work. Let's figure this out. See, can we come back? Can we make it again? That was all we were thinking about. And by Tuesday morning, I had a loan application in the bank. Now, mind you, this happened Sunday, Memorial Weekend, during the coronavirus. How many people are around to do anything? So Tuesday morning, we turned in a loan application to see if this is what we wanted to be able to hold the building, see if I can get the mortgage. Problem is, who's going to loan me money?
Not me.
Not you, not anybody. No sane person I know of would.
That was sent Tuesday morning, and I didn't get a chance to show you it, but this is the outreach to the customers.
Okay. Around the
A customer sent a letter to Rapala saying, "No, you guys are big time with Rapala. You know, you guys, you know, Fish and Frank's has been a big supporter of Rapala. We've met you guys at the tent sale," something along those lines. But this is basically a response from the president of Rapala saying,
Tom? "Yeah." Yeah, I got to call him. I haven't called him yet.
This is his response essentially saying that we're sorry to hear what happened and we're going to do everything we can to support Fish and Frank's. But that came from a customer out of state to a tackle manufacturer expressing their concern and sorrow. And the president of Rapala answering them.
He's the highest Rapala official in the country.
But he answered them
back.
He was
one of the guys I was getting drunk with at ICAST last year.
But that's the profound impact. That's the profound impact that you had, because that customer sent them that, and the president of that company felt deeply enough to send him back a reply rather than just someone from the customer service department going, yeah, we're sorry to hear that, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you got
pretty
Strike
impressive.
Amazing people. You've got DOA, Rapala, Pure Fishing, Savage, all these
small,
companies.
Large companies, smaller companies, they're all.
We had international
AFW.
Companies, you know, that literally would, the people that run these companies come to the store to say hi. They come in and chat with us. We go hang out with them at different stuff.
Go to dinner with them.
We go to dinner with them. They're just, and these are some of the biggest corporations in the world. And it's just really cool. But on the other hand, we were in the top 20 people in the United States buying and selling Pure Fishing products. And that's not, I'm not talking about tackle stores. I'm talking about, obviously, Walmart, the distributors, Bass Pro, all these big ones. We were listed with them in the top 20 people who bought and sold their products. And we were number one in the world on several, and we were major on other ones. Robert and I set a goal out. When I was up the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, I went up there. I was driving boats in the oil spill, Alabama, Louisiana, up in there. and helping out at the oil spill, driving a boat, getting paid crazy money, but I was up there. Got real sick. It took me, what, a couple years to get back on my feet?
Yeah.
A year or two. And
it was a couple years, solid.
We literally decided, you know, let's see what we can do with a tackle shop. And we set dollar amounts that no one in the industry, they just kind of chuckled, and we blew them away. We toasted everybody. With what Robert and I did and the pirate crew at the store, I don't even want to tell you. You would be like, oh, my God, how come you don't have any money? Because numbers are crazy. Because I threw every dime I had into remodeling a couple hundred thousand in new product, all the money we spent remodeling that place, building the seminar areas, putting broadcast trailers in, and, I mean,
but
everything.
You also focused on dimes instead of dollars. You did everything you could to your ability to still survive.
Right.
Not get wealthy, but to sustain. And you kept your prices down to be as competitive and, in most cases, more competitive than any of the chain stores out there. Well, not trying to compete against the mom and pops. That wasn't your thing. Was
never
just,
looked at another tackle store.
You wanted,
always wished them well.
You
Amazon and Walmart, those were the enemies.
Right.
And actually, Walmart didn't turn out to be the enemy. We actually got a lot of business from Walmart, even though we fought with them for years. But the people that worked there were actually customers of ours. When somebody was struggling over stuff, they would just send them down to our store.
Yeah.
So I actually had to learn to, and you know, like the Walmarts.
You had to embrace it a little bit.
I had to embrace the Walmarts.
Yeah. But still.
We did Amazon price match. Who does that?
Well, exactly. You know, and I mean, you do the price match, but you also would make sure that you were doing to get the best price to be the fairest to the customer. You know? And
the big thing was we just had fun.
Yeah.
And honest to God, folks, the number one thing we did was we just didn't want to be the same old, same old.
No.
And so
anyone
we are trying, 50-50 chance we will come back. We don't know. And that's the honest truth. We may come back from this. We may not come back from this. But we're going to try. And that's the reason we put a loan application in for a building. We're talking to other buildings. You know, we're going to see what happens. But like I said Sunday, everything in there is part of the past. And if you let your rearview mirror get too bright, what are you going to have for a future? The reason when you look out the windshield of your car, your rearview mirror is a little tiny spot up on the top. That's so you can see everything else in front of you. So don't focus on the rearview mirror. You're going to crash. Look out the windshield. Enjoy the new stuff coming up. And that's what Robert and I are working on now. That's what I'm working with Jeff and Steve and all the people there.
All of them.
And all the donations, everything you've given is supporting them. Now, I've kept them on payroll now, and my insurance will pay for 60 days of their payroll. I have advised all of them to apply for the unemployment, because what the Democrats did, they said $600 a week extra. Hell, go on unemployment. Make the extra money. We'll get back in business. You can always get off unemployment. You know, but we're trying to get all that together, trying to put all the money. But the one thing I'm going to be doing is if we go into business, we will use it all to go into business. If, God forbid, we can't, then all of the internet money and all that stuff goes to the people that work there. So that's it. All right. We got a few minutes. One last thing before we go into the fishing stuff. The first time you came into the store, RJ, we hadn't known each other long. I saw a thing about WKDW on the internet, real community radio, local programming, and literally fell in love with the idea and came up to talk to you. But it was actually several weeks or a few months before you actually came into the store.
That's true.
What was your... can you think back to your first impression walking in? What kind of whack job did I get involved with?
Well, that was part of it, but the main thing I got when I walked in the door, I said to myself, "This is like home." You know, you felt welcomed. I walked in the door and nobody attacked me at the front door to sell me something. And you know, people are talking and there's customers talking to customers. I actually went in on a fairly busy day, my first time. And I walked through, and it was like Disneyland for me. You know, I love fishing, just like you do. And there's all this stuff. It was a wonderful place. And the pictures, and the mounts, and the old motors, the old outboard motors, and all the rest of that stuff. And then I got to see, Frank, as you expanded again into the new space, it's a wonderful place, and I hope that it can happen again.
Yeah, that's, God forbid it doesn't, but there's always that chance. You can never tell people we are doing this or we are doing that. I won't lie to you, because if I lie to you today, you're not going to believe me tomorrow.
We were going to open Sunday morning.
We tried.
you just don't know. So
on the last 2 minutes before we do the fishing, we're sitting there. I think it was Tuesday, and we're sitting there, and I forget who all was there, a lot of the crew, because, you know, we got a lot of cleanup to do. There's, you know, we had a music room, we had radio show trailers, we had all kinds of stuff there. And they're all doing their thing, and we went over to the thing, and we're having a little farewell toast with some people. My daughter knows her father pretty well. All of a sudden, we're there. Next thing you know, there's a guy from a liquor store going, "I got a delivery for Frank and Terry." So I went over to Walgreens, got some of the little cups, and we were sitting there. We were doing a little toast, you know, memories toast and stuff like that. Quarter shots at a time, boys and girls. Have to be safe. Look what drunk drivers do. They destroy 20, 30 lives. But we're doing that. And this old couple comes up, and we're used to people coming up because they want to talk to the, you know, they're looking for Jeff or Heather or Steve or whoever, Robert, me, whatever. They're looking for somebody to hug and to talk to and all that. And, you know, I forget. I think it was Jeff walked out, talked to me. He says, you know, okay, how's it going? And thinking, and they say, "You got shrimp? You got shrimp? We need shrimp. We need bait." And Jeff's like, well, and standing in front of this burnt out shell of a building, the walls are collapsed down. And they're literally, at this point, because they came around the fence, and they're looking, and they're about 15 feet, 10, 15 feet from the ashes. You can smell the burn. Wondering why we don't have any bait, and what the heck's wrong with us. I said, that summed it up right there. What the heck's wrong with you, Frank? You got no bait.
Right.
Why aren't you open?
That's right, Frank.
They came back and did a toast of what a jerk I am, because I wasn't open that day. So, lots of weird stuff.
Definitely. That's
big fish.
One quick thing. A memory I'm going to take out from the fire. It's towards the end of the day before I was getting ready to leave. And one of the pirate crew comes out from the ashes with the pen reel.
Oh, yeah. Chandler.
And Chandler comes out with this brass pen reel. You can tell me what the model was.
It was Penn International 130.
And he spins the thing, and it's still working. And as we said, when Penn makes a reel, Penn makes a reel.
Literally, a couple Internationals survived. I mean, they're charred. The finish is ruined. But I said, Chandler, if you really want that 130, it's yours. You know what I mean? He literally went under a fallen, collapsed section of roof. Had to crawl back in there, and he's digging through these boxes and stuff. And all of a sudden, I found it. I knew it would be here. I found it. And he's so proud. He actually found all the bolts, the hardware for it, the mounting brackets and everything. He found every bit of it. He was, you know, like a little Wolverine. I mean, he was digging down in. He was going to get that. And he finally found that 130 International. And he says, I got to, you know, he said, I couldn't get it all cleaned up. He said, but it looks really cool. It's all smoked and charred. And I said, Chandler, you're welcome to that. But, I mean, here he is covered in ashes and everything, just beaming. He got his 130 International. That was so cute.
That was pretty good.
Well, he's in his 20s, you know. He gets so excited.
He does. He did find the can of spinach, too, that was next to it.
Oh, yeah, he did find the can of spinach.
You can't read what it says, but it's the can of the Popeye spinach that was sitting right next to it in the case.
Because if you're going to hold this thing up all day, you better eat your spinach.
That's right. Well, pretty amazing.
You know, I went through there. I actually found a couple of jig heads in a package, and I found some burnt-up tide charts and gift certificates. You know, one of the things I feel really bad about is we probably had 30 or 40 customer rods in the bathroom.
Yeah, I thought about that last night, and I went, oh, crap.
Well, you know, we had a kind of an employee bathroom with an old shower stall in it. And we would have anywhere from 30 to 100 and some rods being repaired in any one moment. Well, we didn't have any place to put them, so we started putting them in that old closet slash shower stall thing. And so that's just for all these years where we put all the repair rods. Right. And I went in there, and there's literally nothing left of them. I don't know what I'm going to do with these people and their rods. I felt so bad about that, you know,
because
I've never not paid a bill. You know,
no.
I pay everything. If people gave us a rod to repair and something happened or we lost it, I gave them brand new rods. I don't have any brand new rods. To sum this up, one guy said to Terry, well, at least you've got some fishing tackle. And Terry looked at him, and I just got done telling somebody, you know, we're going to give all the GoFundMe money and all the internet stuff and all the gifts if we can't open to the employees. She said, not quite all. I said, what do you mean? She says, I want some fishing tackle. We don't have any fishing tackle. I got four rods.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a few lures and maybe a little bit odds and ends, but if I was going fishing, I would go in. I would, you know, get a pack of hooks, split shots or whatever. I usually had a little plastic bag I went fishing with because it'd be a long time before I could go. And when I get back, a lot of times I just, you know, okay, here, you know, the kids coming in going fishing, I'd give them whatever was left over off my trip. But
you had the world's biggest tackle box.
Yeah,
I had. And you had it right there for your convenience. It's like if you decided you were going fishing that day or the next morning, you just grabbed it and went.
I literally had one of the largest personal tackle boxes in the industry.
I mean, I've got
mark down what you take, and you know,
I've got an okay tackle box, but you would think that I working there would have all that, but it's like that's the only place I ever went. I spent more time in that place than my own home, but I'm lucky and fortunate enough to live on the water, so I fish in the backyard. My girlfriend loves to fish, and she fishes in the backyard, so it's like if she broke a lure off, I just buy one more, take it home for that night, or until she broke the next one. It's not like I had to have a stockpile because I worked at the place where it's like, I need another lure.
$750,000 worth of tackle laying there.
I just bought it as I daily needed it or monthly needed it or whatever.
Because we got great prices on this stuff. We right. worked there.
Right.
I always found it funny when somebody committed to say, is this lure any good? And I'd say, well, the guy who bought it the first time thought it was.
Right.
For some reason or another, they had no idea I had to pay for that tackle. Like, it was given to me, and okay, here, we'll just put this up there, you know. And I literally bought every single piece of it. Think of how much money we had in pegboard hooks. We had over 15,000 pegboard hooks.
That's just mind-numbing.
I didn't even think about that, yeah.
Just in pegboard hooks.
Pegboard hooks,
15,000 pegboard hooks. We had, I mean, the amount of pegboard walls we had. I mean, we had just gotten in a $10,000 shipment of tackle boxes. You know, I still got to pay for all that stuff. I can't just, I'm not in business. I can't pay my bills. That's ridiculous. You got to pay your bills. You ordered it. You pay for it. You know, but I don't know. Anyway, the big story outside of Fish and Frank's is not there. And maybe will be, maybe won't be. I guess tarpon is the big story right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, on the positive, there's a positive and negative of these fishing reports. It's unfortunate we've been overwhelmed the last couple days, so my fishing reports have been a lot less than normal.
Well, but
I'm still making phone calls. I'm still asking people. You know, I'm returning texts to the people that are asking stuff, and I'm still trying to muster up it out of my gut to ask them how the fishing has been going so I can have some a little bit of sanity and a little bit of normalcy for myself and for this.
You really kind of want to know, but there's part of you that really don't give a rat's butt
right
about anybody catching a fish or anything happening, and the other part that you really want to hang on to it, and at some point it's the last thing you care about, and other points it's the thing you're holding on to and care about the most.
Exactly.
And you have both those things going through your head all the time.
Oh, it's tearing you from both sides. It's crazy. But the tarpon fishing has been good to great, depending on who you talk to. But most of those fish are still in the pass. There are quite a few fish starting to move out on the beaches all the way up to Venice Inlet, from what I've heard from a couple people. But the vast majority of the heaviest concentrations are still in the pass, and the ones, they just haven't moved into the harbor yet. A couple guys have been looking really hard as they're heading out to the pass and to the beaches. So, you know, we're hoping that any day now they may move back into the pass, but all the big thread fins are mainly down below Cape Hayes and out. Very few schools of large tarpon-sized threadies in the upper harbor. There's a lot of small schools of the little guys that people are confusing with whitebait, but the major food source that they're wanting has been the crabs, and the crabs and shrimp have been flushing sporadic amounts every evening since this last full moon. There's been almost every day people are saying we're still seeing a handful of pass crabs coming through. We're seeing shrimp flowing through at 4 o'clock in the afternoon while they're out there in that pass or near the pass. It's a really bizarre scenario to hear some of this, because usually that happens really heavy a couple days before and after the full and new moon. But daily people are seeing a dozen or a couple dozen crabs while out there in that afternoon feed, along with shrimp swimming on the surface. I mean, I was out there 2 weeks ago with Carl and Christina. She points out a shrimp, and it was like a select size shrimp. Just swimming right by at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know, did somebody's bait bucket tip over? What's up with this? And then there was a couple more, and then I've had other customers tell me about it. So there's some bizarre food going through there to keep them out there.
Really?
Yeah. So it's been interesting. And
you would think at this time of year there wouldn't be any shrimp running yet. They would all be gone.
You would think they'd at least.
But this is what, May?
May. Okay. Usually the June full moon is when they really boogie. But still amazing that...
Oh, that's right. All that shrimp is stacked up in the ICW right now.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking for really big shrimp, it's going to be along through the intercoastal waterway. They seem to make it out to the deeper water, the ICW, and kind of hold there. And then by the end of May, they're gone. Because when you get the little shrimp up in the harbor and some of the southern ends... The shrimpers learned that they could go up and grab some bigger shrimp out of there, but it was a long ways to run.
Right.
Most of them couldn't do it because their boat wouldn't get there and back.
Not in a day.
Not in a day. So, yeah, I forgot about that. It's good you reminded me.
Yeah, just pretty unusual.
So, with the tarpon, how are they on the beaches right now?
There's pods out there. You just got to look for them. I mean, they're in smaller groups of anywhere from 5 to as many as 50 in a group, but they're being really, really picky. The only few guys that have been hooking them with some consistency have been being real patient, staying a long distance away, and casting crabs. A couple guys have actually caught a couple on squirrel fish that they've gone out and sabikied and thrown those up against into them in the shoreline or in the shallower areas, I guess I should say. But I haven't heard much about them eating thread fins. It's been just a couple oddball squirrel fish and all crabs. But there again, depends on which guy you talk to. The water is super, super clear because, I mean, we've gotten some rain, but not enough to do anything to the water clarity at all. So I think that's a huge part of why people are getting frustrated, is because they're staying on top of the fish too close. And the fish are just feeling a little bit of that pressure. You know, that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
One of the reasons that I was thinking about tarpon on the beach is because right now that's where the vast majority of bigger snook are going to be.
Yeah, and I'm hearing guys seeing those,
too. You're going to see tons of 18-inch snook and tons of 40-inch snook.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a byproduct that some of the guys have been saying that they've been seeing. Because a lot of tarpon fishermen like to stay about a mile off the beach and look for them, which is kind of where, I mean, for me, I like to stay about a half a mile out just because I can see better because my eyes are terrible. But I'm usually with somebody who's got much better eyes, so we're usually half a mile to a mile off the beach so you can look both directions, one towards the shore and one towards the west, and parallel it looking for fish. You'll see them rolling, or you'll actually see the shadows right now because the water is super clear. Even in 30 feet of water, you can make out a school of tarpon swimming close to the bottom. But a handful of guys have been finding some of those tarpon up in like 4 feet of water, just either right on top of the bar or inside the bar closest to the beach. And they've been talking about some of the snook they've been seeing, mostly closer towards the passes, like Little Gasparilla Pass, Stump Pass, but Captiva Pass. Several guys have told me about those fish down there. And they're seeing, like you said, fish from 18 inches to the biggest one I've heard of was, guy said it was about 36 inches, but he said it was surrounded by all these little snooks, so it looked enormous to him.
Right.
You know, but even down there, my buddy down in St. James City, he said he's been seeing a few big snook right there just on the inside of Redfish Pass. Mm. So there's some good fish around.
All right, I've got to go back to one thing, because I was talking about how these reporters all made me mad,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, how I was rude to them, and, geez, it was just horrible. Here's the ending of that story, which I forgot to add in because this is a little confusing. We're doing there are no notes for this, boys and girls. It's just what we're thinking and what we're talking about. Sydney from Wink News. She's a little blonde girl. She is one of the most caring people on the planet. Now, I've got to give major credit to the women who work at NBC2 and Wink News in Fort Myers. They stood there asking me questions, and, I mean, I went off on them. Pretty nasty, you know, because I was trying to answer all the questions, trying to be nice. I know people want to know what's going on, and I know it's their job. But literally, this is one of the worst days of my life. It's like one of my kids died. And God bless them. The women at Wink and the women at NBC2 actually were forgiving. I've talked to them a lot since. They've come back many times. They were just so amazing, those two channels. There was one other channel that was there, and the girl was okay, and they did a great job editing it, but they didn't care. NBC2 and Wink really cared. They were supportive. I was getting phone calls and texts from them later asking if I was okay, because I had dealt with these people before, and for them, younger people like that, to forgive me for just going stupid on them and to come back. I wanted to shout out those two stations, because Wink News in Fort Myers and NBC2 in Fort Myers, there was some really awesome people that came up, and they actually cared what happened. It wasn't a news story. These women were in tears there sometimes. They were talking to the people and everything. So I just didn't want to make it sound like they were bad people. I was the bad person in that. They were just reporters who are, I think reporters are taught bad things, dumb things. Ask multiple different questions, not the same question rephrased six times. So I don't think it was their fault. It was my fault. But they were very forgiving about it. Next thing I want to know is, got that off my chest because I felt guilty about that. Sharks. What's going on with the sharks?
There's still a lot of the smaller sharks in the harbor, especially in the 20-foot holes where the tarpon would normally be. The black-nosed sharks and the Atlantic sharp-nosed. I've had several people tell me like solid 4-foot Atlantic sharp-nosed that they've been catching. And a few of the pictures that I got to see, they're actually pretty close to that, I would have to guess. Over 3-foot for sure, which is pretty impressive for an Atlantic sharp-nosed. And then we've had quite a few people catching some decent-sized black tips from 3 to 5 feet. And some of the guys, just before, obviously, all this happened, I had one gentleman in. He's like, I hooked three of those black tips or spinner sharks that just came launching into the air and did a corkscrew and broke me off instantly. So I need to buy some of this piano wire because everyone's telling me that's what you need to use. And I'm like, no matter what you use, they're going to probably spin and break you off. But piano wire, they tend to break that a little bit quicker when they do that curl into the air and spin. And once I explained it to him and showed him, I said, for all around sharks, either one is perfect. But when it comes to them spinning in the air, cable's a little tiny bit better, but it's not much of a difference, you know. But the black tips have been impressive sizes, and they've all given birth. So I've had several people be fishing on the flats looking for the snook and redfish down in Bull and Turtle Bay or even over on the West Wall or Pine Island that are catching 12 to 18 inch black tip, what perceives to be black tip sharks. And in most cases, if it's only about 12 to 15 inches, it's probably a baby black tip because that's where they're born at, you know, that size range. And had quite a few people catching those as bycatch while they're fishing for the snook and redfish, which is kind of neat. And
there was a story off the El Jobin Bridge on Monday. Somebody hooked into a very large bull shark.
Yeah.
Way bigger than you would expect to see at and, you know, there was no chance of even landing this fish. But the conversation was they got it up to the pier, and it basically just looked at them, swam around a little bit, swung its head in one direction, popped a line, and just leisurely swam off. Like, it was going through an exercise with them, but it was not concerned at all about being hooked.
Right.
But it was one big bull shark, they said. It was one of the biggest ones they've ever seen up there.
Right, and you expect every now and then to see one up there, and same way with up in the Peace River, but usually it's juveniles, like, three, you know, 2.5 to maybe 4 foot at the biggest.
Look what I found.
I had a customer yesterday on the phone this morning that was telling me about a 5 or 6 foot bull shark that he actually saw swimming, finning on the surface of the Upper Peace River. Nice. Nice touch. Pretty impressive. So there's been, you know, some good sharks all the way around, and then some of the larger sharks have been way offshore, you know, from 3 to 10 miles. So if you want to look for some of those bigger guys, that's going on out there.
Well, I had to go out. I thought it was my insurance adjuster on the phone, so I had to go out in the hallway. And I found these guys.
Yeah. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Frank. You can pull the chairs up. There's chairs there. Mike Myers. Captain Josh Olive. We've been trying to fit a little fishing in, but
we don't know anything about that.
Here's the one thing I'm going to ask you. Do you remember the first time coming in the store?
My very first time?
Yeah, can you remember when you first came in?
I can.
How was it?
It was eye-opening. Because you were standing by the counter. I was a new guide coming in. You'd never met me before. I'd been here a month. And I went to give you my card, and I was all hopped up about, I'm a fishing guy, and I'm coming from Bradenton down here, and you passed my cards out, and you handed me a book, and it had like 40 other guides in it, and you said, I already got some. I was like, oh, okay. Because I was brand new at marketing at that time, I had no idea what I was doing, and you actually kind of led me in the right direction by showing me that, dude, you're just a guide at that moment.
Well,
so, and the hard next time part, I came, it was with my daughter. So,
the hard part about it all is that when you've got many, many people all doing it, and everybody gets excited about when they're doing it the first time, but finding a place, and you didn't pick our place to be a home at first. You were coming in, and then you went to another store because you became friends with another tackle shop owner.
Mm-hmm.
And but the advice you did was sound. You find one place, you make a home out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good guy. I mean, there's no problem with that. But it was, you've got to have somebody cares when you come through the door.
Right.
If you're going to get deals, you're going to work on stuff, you know, the guy behind the counter actually has to care that you came in. Just because you walked in, there's a oil, when you get your captain's license in the paper, that twists the tendons of the wrist. You never shake hands with your hand out like a normal handshake. It's always palm up. And your fingers twitching.
Right.
So It's just one of the things about captains. But if you're going to be a starter captain, I've always tried to tell the guys, find a home, make sure those people want to see you coming in the door. That's when you're going to get your deals and discounts, not just because you're a captain, because I have a master's license, which I still have, and I'm a master captain. Gee, good luck impressing me with that six-pack. All right, Josh.
I will tell you this.
I insulted Mike when he first came in, so...
Okay, so I'll insult you. The first time I went into Fish and Frank's was not what I would call the most positive experience. I went in to get shrimp. I was going fishing at El Jabin, and this has got to be 96, 97, something like that. And I usually went to the little shop down at El Jabin, but they didn't have any shrimp that day, so I had to come all the way back up to your place to pick up some shrimp. You were out of my way, which is why I went to the other shop. And I went in to get my shrimp, and I was treated fairly because I was a little punk, but it was not a positive experience because I complained about the size of the shrimp that I got because I felt like they were too small, and I was told that they were big enough for what I was going out there to do. And it was a long-haired guy who I dealt with. I don't know who it was, but it left me feeling weird. And then I realized later why, though, because Fish and Frank's is the kind of place where you always get what you give. And if you go in there with a crap attitude, then it's hard for the people to treat you any better than that. But if you go in there with a good attitude, if you go in there like you should be going in there, hey, you're going fishing, you're about to go out there and have a good day, then it's just amazing the response that you get from people behind the counter. But it's kind of like a mirror, you know? You go in there and you're kind of a jerk and you get that right back at you.
Yeah, a lot of people said it really felt like home because when you walk in the door, we called it customer abuse. It was a local specialty.
Yes.
If you really wanted to be treated kind of badly, just like your brother or your uncle or something would be, that's really what happened.
And at that age, I was too dumb to know.
Yeah.
So. Well, I will say this about Fish and Frank's, because I was very hesitant a few years back when I first met you to come in and ask for anything, because I never felt like I deserved anything as a captain, and that was one thing you taught me way back when. I stayed away. I had a couple different shops I'd go to, but I never was anywhere. Like, I didn't, and Josh used to always tell me, you need to go to Frank's. And I'd go there, and you'd offer a discount, and I didn't want them. I didn't feel like I deserved them, and I'm that kind of person, I think.
But you built it up. When you come back later, you were a different person. Right. You weren't the same guy who came in the first time.
When you finally invited me over, I think that's the first time I ever felt in this community ever at home somewhere, ever. Like, I never had a tackle shop that was mine. I never had anybody giving me anything special, nothing.
This was the one thing that everybody said was, this was my tackle shop.
Right.
We laughed, and we always said we held it in trust for people. It wasn't ours. It was literally the people who all around there. That was what was crazy. Picture me looking at my burnt out place.
It's a pretty stoic picture, though.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
It really is.
I like the picture better on page 2.
Oh, me with the little kid?
Yeah.
The trophies?
That seems more like Fish and Frank.
Definitely better.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Me kind of looking at the burnt out shop was kind of Fish and Frank.
Yeah, it was for that
moment.
We've
been talking about how many times I've been knocked down, put out of business. I mean, everything that's gone wrong over the last 35 years and why I don't have any money.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
But, you see that, RJ?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote my column about it, too. I think you'll enjoy
it. I have a rather flabby butt.
I didn't want to say that.
You didn't want to mark that? I'm looking at that old guy's sagginess there, you know?
It just looks saggy because it's completely flat.
Yeah, well, you know, did you see the very last Crocodile Dundee movie? Because the first ones, all the women loved it. They did the very last one. They kind of showed the back of it. I'm thinking, flabby old guy butt. Flat, you know? I mean, and he was proud of it. I'm looking at this going, God, am I old?
I could have photoshopped you one, but it wasn't my photo, so.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad you're not photoshopping my butt, Josh.
Don't allow him to photoshop
I'm happy
anything.
With that. Robert, did we take a return to the worst?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did, it's okay.
Yeah, where do you go from there?
We go out to the Gulf of Mexico, 5 to 20 miles out. What's going on out there?
Mainly, there's been some snapper, some permit, and a few cobia. You know, mixed mash of little stuff. It hasn't been anything real big. There's been some Spanish mackerel out there also mixed in with them. But if you jump out further away, you know, into that 25-30 mile mark, now you're getting into some legal grouper. Are amberjack still open or do they close this weekend?
Amberjack are closing on the 1st.
Okay, so they close in this weekend.
Yeah.
So amberjack are still open, but they do close this weekend.
And if you have the chance, the charter that we did last week was amazing. We probably boated 40 or 50 amberjack. We had to boat 40 or 50 to get our 5 keepers, but caught a lot of fish.
Right. Yeah, and then there's also been some, the red grouper and the amberjacks, but there's also been the king mackerel have still been out there and been several reports of the blackfin tuna. So there's some pretty good pelagic stuff going out there in that 25 to 30 mile mark. Makes it definitely worthwhile checking out and going out there and messing around with it. You know, I don't know what the weather's supposed to be like this weekend because I haven't really paid attention to it, honestly.
Rain in the afternoon.
As long as it's not windy, you know, people can still run offshore and go check out some of that. But I think if you are running offshore, definitely out there to that 25, 30 miles, you should have a flatline bait out the back of the boat. And also, if you're going from one spot to a nearer spot, just slow troll over to it because you don't know really this time of year what you're going to run into.
You know how trustworthy the NOAA forecasts are, but they have nothing over 10 knots through the 1st.
Okay.
So.
There you go. So that's definitely a worthwhile possibility out there.
Of course, it's blowing 15 right now.
Right. I literally just got off the water, and trust me, it's way over 10.
All right. Well, this has been This Week in Fishing. Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, RJ up in the golden chrome command towers of powers up there, making sure everything stays relevant. Our guests today, last minute, Captain Mike Myers and Captain Josh Olive. And I am going to be... My Toys R Us as a teenager was the only... I don't know who that is, but...
Christina,
okay.
It's your only favorite place.
The only thing I can tell you is I may be Fishing Frank next week, but I'm not sure if I'll be Frank from Fishing Franks. But we're going to find out, and we will enjoy the ride together. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll let you know if we're coming back or not. Bye-bye. Just to ease my mind.